Kundigidi Govardhan Kijan. Vrindavan Dham Kijan. Sura Dham Kijan. Mayapur Dham Kijan. Jagadapuri Dham Kijan. Gangamaya Jamuna Devi Kijan. Bhakti Devi Kijan. Tulsi Maharani Kijan. Samaveta Bhakti Vrinda Kijan. Gaur Premananda. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga. All glories to Sri Prabhupada.
This is a kind of microphone. The microphone picks up very nicely, so it has to be close. And then I can put it down, and then everything is fine.
Is this close enough?
Oh, well, that's better now.
Still, this money sound. The sound is still from. Namaha Vishnu Padaya Vishnu Prasaya Vitale Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Vitale Namaste Sarasvati Devi Gauravani Vitale Namaste Sisi Vadavas Vitale Namaste. Prabhu, the sound is still funny. Still funny. The sound's a little like echoing or something. Vande Hum Shri Guru, there we go. Vande Hum Shri Guru, Shri Yutao Padakamalam, Shri Guru and Vaishnavam, Shri Shri Rupa, Sagachau, Tham Sagana, Raghunatham, Vitam, Sam Sajiva, Sadvaitam, Sadvadutam, Paritana, Sahita, Krishna, Tetan, Deva, Shri Radha, Krishna, Padam, Sahagana, Lavita, Shri, and Shakam, Vitam, Shri. Panchika, Pachi, Vishaki, Vasali, Vitakti, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
So it's June 6, 2013 at the summer camp in Serbia. We're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 15, Text 29. Vasudevana Rudana. Constant remembrance. Paribrahmita, expanded. Ramasa, with great velocity. Do you all know what velocity means? Speed. Bhaktya, in devotion. Nirmatita, subsided. Ashesha, unlimited. Kashaya, dint, Dishana, conception, Arjuna, Arjuna. If I'm going too fast, just let me know. And anyone who's just listening to the English, if I'm going too fast for you to follow the English, please let me know. Also, if I say any word in English, those of you who are listening in English, that you don't understand, please ask me. Okay, and if you're too shy, just make a little something so I can. Okay, is that a deal?
Yeah.
Yes? Okay. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. Arjuna's constant remembrance of the lotus feet of Lord Shri Krishna rapidly increased his devotion, and as a result, all the trash in his thoughts subsided. Purport. Material desires in the mind are the trash of material contamination. By such contamination, the living being is faced with so many compatible and incompatible things that discourage the very existence of spiritual identity. Birth after birth, the conditioned soul is entrapped with so many pleasing and displeasing elements, which are all false and temporary. They accumulate due to our reactions to material desires. But when we get in touch with the transcendental Lord in his variegated energies by devotional service, the naked forms of all material desires become manifest, and the intelligence of the living being is pacified in its true color. As soon as Arjuna turned his attention toward the instructions of the Lord, as they are inculcated in the Bhagavad Gita, his true color of eternal association with the Lord became manifest, and thus he felt free from all material contaminations. How would we explain inculcated?
Invested?
That may be just as hard of a word. Let's see.
Manifested.
Let's see. We might even have...
Explained.
We might even have a dictionary here that will explain nicely. Okay, inculcate means instill by persistent instruction. An example, the failures of the churches to inculcate a sense of moral responsibility or to teach an idea, an attitude, or habit by such instruction as they will try to inculcate you with a respect for culture. So, taught. So, as they are inculcated in the Bhagavad Gita, simple definition would be just taught. Thank you. Vasudev Anivanuhana Parivrim Hitaramasha Bhaktanirma Ditashesha Kasayadi Shanodruna. Arjuna's constant remembrance of the lotus feet of Lord Sri Krishna rapidly increased his devotion, and as a result, all the trash in his thoughts subsided. So expanded with great velocity. Who would like their Krishna consciousness to expand with great speed? Anybody? Would any of you like to go very slowly? Anyone want to go slowly? If you want to go slowly, the class is not for you. Actually, I had, many years ago, I had a devotee contact me and said, my Krishna consciousness has become very dry. They just don't have any taste anymore. So we were chatting on the computer for about half an hour. And then at one point he revealed to me, he said, you know, I prayed to Krishna, don't go too fast with me. Let me go really slowly. I said, well, that's your problem. It's very nice in Bhaktiloka, Bhaktivinoda Thakur gives a commentary on the Upadeshamrita, two of the verses. And when he talks about Niyamagraha, he talks about that there are different steps in devotion. And he says that you will have difficulty if you go too fast, but also if you go too slowly. Just like on the highway, whatever you call them here, the motorways, the fast streets, limited access highways. So there's usually a maximum speed limit, but also a minimum speed limit. Because if you're going too slowly, then the other cars will bump into you. So, of course, we can go as slowly as we like. Krishna says, swalpa, even a little advancement. So if you want to go very, 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 very slowly and stay at Adushraddha for your whole lifetime, that is all right. And then you can pick up in your next life. That's okay. That's acceptable. We don't have a philosophy that you have to fully surrender to Krishna now or else you go to hell. It's not our philosophy. But if you want to make rapid advancement, then this verse is very instructive. And we see that this verse is mostly about Arjuna's choosing to use his thinking, feeling, and willing. His making a conscious determined choice. And by the use of that choice, his bhakti becomes accelerated. And we see two effects of this acceleration. If you look, oh, it's gone now. You can put it back. All right, let's put it back. That's fine. You can just keep it up. If that's all right to keep it up? Okay. And later we're going to look at another verse also. We're going to look at 285 also. So. Okay. So, still not there. Anyway, in the purport, if you remember, does anyone remember? Yes, of course you remember everything. Yes.
The two things is one is that his devotion increased and all the trash within his mind subsided.
The devotion increased and all the trash in his mind subsided. Yes, that's from the verse. What about, boy, if I can get something that Prahladananda Swami doesn't remember, do I get a second piece of free pizza? I got one piece for producing a book last year, but I'm wondering if I can...
It's already there.
Oh, well. So in the purport, how does Srila Prabhupada expand this, the two things? Can you find it here on the screen? Anybody? Yes?
I'm not sure if we will correct, but I see he expanded this Arjuna's meditation on the lotus feet by explaining how he turned his attention toward the instructions of the Bhagavad Gita.
Oh, okay. So what you're explaining, it wasn't what I had in mind, but that's very nice. That what does it mean to turn your attention to the lotus feet? It means to be fixed on the Lord's instructions. That's very, very nice. And in fact, we'll be getting to that and at the end of the class. So thank you so much for bringing that up. But I'm looking for two things that happened when he fixed his mind on the lotus feet of the Lord. Well, there were two effects. Yes?
The material desires appear, kind of show themselves.
Yes, in a naked form. And I take this statement as Srila Prabhupada as one of the most significant statements of his, that Arjuna was able to see the material desires in their naked form. And what else was he able to perceive because of his meditation? Yes?
The true color of his eternal association.
The true color of his eternal association. So we have, right, two things, Maya and Krishna. You understand? So where in the scriptures does it say we have to see both? Ishapanishad, can anybody see the verse? Let's see, there's two, say there's six, really, verses on that topic. Yes? Can you tell us the translation? Excellent. So that's vidya and avidya, and there's another one that's parallel to that one. Sambhutam, asambhutam. Anybody know that verse? Tari, you remember that verse? Not so sure. So there also is one should know the temporary and the eternal side by side. Knowledge and ignorance side by side, temporary and eternal side by side, not one-sided. Not just to know the world and Maya, and not just to know Krishna, but to know both.
Bhagavad Gita 7.2. There, now I'm going to explain to you both the phenomena.
Middle and new.
Knowing which you'll attain to.
Oh, that's also. So, I feel as you didn't hear, Maharaj was also quoting Bhagavad Gita 7.2, to know both. Okay, so let's first look, we're going to first look at the bad. Is that all right? Because I think people like to end with the sweet. So we're going to eat our bitter melon first. Is that all right? So please don't get scared. This is a little bitter. But we have a gulabjamin at the end. Is that all right for everybody? Okay, so we're going to look first at the naked form of material desires. Then we're going to look at the true color of eternal relationship. And then we're going to look at the constant meditation on the lotus feet of the Lord, the means. So first we're going to look at the effects, and then we're going to look at the process. All right, so as we're going through the effects, if you're thinking, how, we'll get to that at the end. Is that all right with everybody?
Yeah.
All right, so what do we mean by the naked forms of material desires? The reason, my dear friends, that we feed and harbor our material desires, which as Prabhupada says in this purport, he says that all of these pleasing and displeasing elements accumulate due to our reactions to material desires. I have a material desire, and I act on it, and when I act on it, I get a reaction, and that reaction covers my actual identity. So why do we go for these material desires? Because we don't see them in their naked form. We see them in a way that they are not. And that is, of course, the definition of Maya, that which is not, something that appears to be different from what it actually is. So my favorite story in this connection is from the Odyssey, and Srila Prabhupada would also sometimes quote from the Odyssey, although he didn't quote this section as far as I know. So I don't know if they teach the Odyssey anymore in schools. I don't know. In Europe, do they still teach the Greek classics? It's funny because Srila Prabhupada would quote from the Odyssey without even referencing it, as if all of his audience naturally understood what he was talking about. But now I'm finding that people, you know, I don't know what they know about today, just the movie stars or something. So in the Odyssey, Ulysses is coming back from winning the war. He's going by boat. And there's many obstacles on the way. So one of the obstacles is what's called the sirens, from which we get the English word siren as a warning on an ambulance or a police car. So does anyone know what the sirens were? Yes?
They were ladies who sung very beautifully, and when the sailors sailed by, they became attracted by the sirens, and they crashed their boats into the island and died.
Yes. So the sirens, I'll repeat, the sirens were very beautiful ladies, or appeared to be very beautiful ladies. Actually, they were ugly witches. They appeared to be very beautiful ladies, and when they would sing, the sailors would become enchanted. It was a magical song. And they would see this island as a tropical paradise with these beautiful young women on it, and they would just go to the island. But the actual form of the island was a desert covered with the bones of dead sailors that the witches had eaten. So they would take this form. Of course, this reminds us of who in Krishna Lila? Putana. So they would take this form through enchantment. And the enchantment, interestingly enough, we could get into this in depth, but I don't think we will now, was through sound. So by putting out a sound, they enchanted these sailors. So Ulysses was warned, don't listen. Don't listen to the sound. And this is actually the first pitfall Raghunath Das Goswami gives in Manushiksha, which we'll be studying, Krishna willing, on Friday and Saturday. The sound of material topics, or the sound of liberation. The talking of liberation, talking of material topics. So Ulysses told all of his sailors, put wax in your ears so you won't hear this enchanting sound. But he was interested. He wanted to know, what did this enchantment look like? So he didn't put wax in his own ears. And he told his sailors, tie me to the mast of the ship so I can't get away and do anything. I can't get the steering wheel. And any instructions that I give during this time, don't follow them. So they're going past the island, and the sailors, they see this desert with bones, human bones, and these hideous witches, cannibalistic witches, and they're rowing as fast as they can to get past the island. And Ulysses, he sees a paradise with beautiful women singing sweet. And he's just, go to the island. My dear friends, when we see the naked form of material desires, automatically we lose our attraction for them. The reason that we are attracted to material desires is we see them as something that they are not. Why do we see them as something that they are not? And this is very heavy and very intense, so I'm not talking to anybody in this room for this section of the class. I'm only talking to all the people in Maya, you know, who are not present. So we see our material desires as something other than what they are, because we're cheaters and hypocrites and full of deceit. Again, none of us. I really like it that Krishna says in the 16th chapter, Kama Ashrita, and he also says Ahankara Ashrita. One takes shelter of lust. One takes shelter of false ego. All of our material desires we think are very, very nice. I like to compare them to like a pet python. So Raghunath Das Goswami has a comparison to a tiger. I like a comparison to a pet python. So sometimes people keep very dangerous pets. Oh, nice python, nice python. And then one day the man doesn't show up at his job, you know, and they come. It happens. You'll find it in the newspapers. You know, if you read just the news headlines every once in a while, you'll see man eaten by pet python, you know. And they go to the apartment, and there's this python with this big lump in the middle. So we think our material desires are very nice because we don't see them as what they are. Even as devotees. We think, well, I am working for truth and justice in the Hare Krishna movement. And so because I am working for truth and justice, of course I have to offend some devotees. And I may go to hell for offending the devotees, but like the gopis, we're willing to put the dust of their feet on the head of Krishna to go to hell. So I am so surrendered that I am willing to go to hell by offending the devotees because I am working for injustice. We think like this. We actually think like this. We think if I didn't have any greed, I wouldn't go try to sell a lot of books. What would be my motive? I remember one very senior devotee saying to me, if I had no lust, I would leave my wife and children. I wouldn't take care of them anymore. I wouldn't be responsible. I'd become irresponsible. And many times we don't even see that that's what's motivating us. We're thinking, I'm motivated by my real concern for my service and my real dedication. And actually we're motivated by something else. And sometimes Krishna shows you, hey you, that's not bhakti, it's pride. It's just pride. Or it's just envy. Or it's just lust. Yes? Has this happened to anybody? The curtain parts. You know, the dark, dark curtain parts and the sun shines for a minute. And you're thinking this is bhakti and it's a weed. Rupa Goswami talks about that, these little weeds that look like bhakti. And you can be watering them, my dear friends, for many lifetimes actually. Nice weed, nice. Look at the pretty weed. And meanwhile your bhakti's going... And in the name of bhakti, it can be in the name of bhakti. Oh, I'm chanting so many rounds, 150 rounds. See? I'm chanting. Are you seeing? I'm chanting 150 rounds, everybody! And we're thinking, you know, oh, I'm so devoted, I'm so this and so that, and it's just pride, or it's just... You understand? Yes? We'll get into this a lot more with Manashiksha. So one sees the material desires for what they are. And my dear friends, do you know what the material desires are in their real naked form?
Trash.
They're trash, but they're actually worse than trash.
Poison.
Hmm?
Poison.
They're like poison, yes. I'm sorry. Again, this isn't about anybody here. Really, it isn't. They're evil. A material desire means that I'm happy at someone else's unhappiness. I want to be better than others. I want to be the happiest. I want to be the best. I want to enjoy at someone else's expense. This, of course, is the essence of meat eating. I am getting pleasure at the pain and suffering of another living entity. But you know what, my dear friends? Every single material desire is exactly like that. Exactly like that. My happiness is at the cost of somebody else's happiness. But we don't see that. We don't perceive it like that. We cover it as something else. So when one sees material desires in their naked form, it doesn't remove our free will. Our free will is never removed. But it gives us the opportunity to choose wisely. When you see them for what they are, the sailors could have still rowed to the island. They weren't being physically prevented. You understand? Just like any of us could go to some restaurant and eat a hamburger. It's not that our will has been removed. It's not that our will is surgically removed. But because we see the hamburger for what it is, we are not attracted. Everybody understand? You don't see this is some food. You see this is some crying, tortured animal. And why would I want to enjoy something at the cost of this crying, tortured animal? And every single material desire is. Therefore, one says, no, I will not do that. And when one sees material desires in their naked form, my dear friends, there's no going back. If someone says, yes, I've seen something, but then it comes back, then we haven't seen it in its naked form. If Krishna shows you, oh, the reason you're doing this is envy, and you know, no, I don't want that, then you haven't seen it in its naked form, and it comes back. When one sees it in its naked form, Krishna says, this is actually envy. You think it's service, but it's envy. And you look at it, and you see, oh, it is a cannibalistic witch. I am getting my pleasure by harming myself and others and hurting my relationship with Krishna. I choose not to do this anymore. Then Krishna takes it away and it is gone and it will not come. It is. So to see the naked form of material desires, we are very afraid to see the naked form of material desires, because if we see them in their naked form, we will not be able to be in illusion about them anymore, and then we will not be able to indulge in them anymore very easily. It's extremely difficult to continue to indulge in a material desire after seeing it in its naked form. It's possible, but it's quite difficult. So we generally resist this with everything that we can. Show me truth, but not that one. I want to see the truth, but not about my own material desires. Okay, that was the bitter note. Now we're finished. Right? So the other thing that we will see the truth of, right, is our own color. How does Prabhupada put it here? Pacified in its true color. So I wanted also to look at another verse. This is 8.5. And the translation, 285, the translation of this verse is the sound incarnation of Lord Krishna, which is very related, of course, to this meditating by hearing the instructions. The Supreme Soul, i.e. Srimad Bhagavatam, enters into the heart of a self-realized devotee, sits on the lotus flower of his loving relationship, and thus cleanses the dust of material associations such as lust, anger, and hankering. Thus it acts like autumnal rains upon pools of muddy water. So you can see this verse is very, very similar. One meditates on the Lord's instruction, one understands one's relationship, and the dirt is cleared away. And I really like something that Srila Prabhupada says in this purport. It's a little bit down in the purport. It starts with, by sincere efforts to hear Srimad Bhagavatam. Can you find it? Ah, there you go. By sincere efforts to hear Srimad Bhagavatam, notice the word sincere, one realizes his constitutional relationship with the Lord in the transcendental humor of servitude, friendship, parental affection, or conjugal love, and by such self-realization, one becomes situated at once in the transcendental loving service of the Lord. So the true color of our relationship with the Lord, as Prabhupada is referring to in today's verse, is very specific. So in the beginning, we have some idea of Jivera Swarupaya Krishnara Nityadasa. And it's mostly a theoretical idea. It's a philosophical idea. I'm not this body, I'm a soul. But that's not sufficient. That's not sufficient. Exactly who am I as a soul? Just like even in material life, people want to know, who am I? I remember when my second child was born, I used to be the guru cook in the New York temple. You said you cook for Jamal Krishnamurti? Oh, basically, so I was the guru cook. I didn't so much like cooking for Jamal Krishnamurti. So I had just had a baby, so I wasn't cooking at that time. And one of the servants of one of the gurus came to me and said, "Oh, what kind of baby did you have?" Lizard, I don't know what it is. I said, "Well, I hope it was a devotee baby." So you know, when a child is born, first thing you ask, is it a boy or a girl? Some specificity, not just I had a baby. Well, what does it look like? Hey, there's something specific. I've helped deliver a lot of babies. And with one birth, the mother was very black, African, very black. And the father was very, very white. I mean, very, 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 very white. White, 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 white hair. White, 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 white skin. Blue, 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 blue eyes. Super, super. Like that cloth there, practically. So the woman was in labor very quickly, and we were rushed to the hospital very, very quickly. And she gave birth to the baby while her husband was parking the car, because we went in an ambulance. And so the baby was born before he was there. So the baby was born, it was white. You know, she's very, very black, very, very dark African lady. And so the doctors and the nurses were all shocked. They said, they didn't know what to say. They were just stunned into silence. And they said, ma'am, your baby is white. And then her husband walked into the room at that moment and says, "How is everything going?" I said, "That's the father." And everyone went, "Oh." So specific, you know, is my child a boy or a girl? Is it black or white? Right? And as the child grows, there's some specificity. Are they a musician? Are they an artist? Right? You have some children, they're really into logic and some really intuitive. They have their different nature and their different characteristics. And intelligent parents, they try to nurture the child's characteristics, right? I speak to many people from Indian families and they say, you know, our parents tell us you have to be either a doctor or an IT specialist and that's it. There's only like two occupations in the world. But it should be that parents say to their child, what is your natural propensity? And as the child grows, then they develop in their true color. So this should happen in our spiritual life also. This chaita dharpana marginam, this cleansing of the mirror of the heart. So first, when we look in the mirror of the heart, all we see is dirt. And as it gets cleansed, one starts to see not only the naked form of material desires, but one also starts to see one's true color of relationship with the Lord. And very nice is a lecture by Srila Prabhupada on the Nectar Devotion, where he talks about a car. He says if a car is broken, you may be pushing the car. And pushing it. But he said the idea of pushing it is so the engine will start to turn on its own power. He said if the engine doesn't start to turn on its own power, then you're not just going to push it all the time. So in the beginning, there is some pushing. But the engine should kick in. And it's interesting that Srila Prabhupada uses the verse, Rama Eva Hi Kevalam, in this connection. He says if you're simply going on with your bhakti, and you don't awaken to your true color of relationship with the Lord, Shama Evihi Kevalam, you're wasting your time. So this has to be seen also. And this means our particular mood, our particular service to the Lord. And at some point that should start to awaken. Now it can't be forced. It can't be forced. It can't be something artificial. It can't be something just made up. It can't be just some intellectual thing, but it should come. And if it's not coming after so many years, 10, 15, 20 years, then there may be something wrong with our method. Just like Srila Prabhupada said, if you're eating, but you're not getting nourished, then he said either you're not really eating, or there's parasites.
that are taking your nourishment. So not really eating means like you're just chewing gum. You understand? It looks like you're eating, and there's saliva, and there's some flavor, at least for a while. But there's no nourishment. Or today they have fake food. So I was... Hare Krishna. I missed your seminar yesterday, Marsh, because I had a laundry catastrophe. And so I had to be in the landlady's house for like an hour and a half fixing the laundry catastrophe. And so they said to me, would you like some coffee? I said, no, I don't drink coffee. And then the landlady, she can't speak much English, and she's showing me this little packet. She says, sugar from America. She also showed me that with the laundry soap. This is from America. I don't know if she's thinking because I'm an American, I'll think it's good, or she thinks anything from America is good, I don't know. So I look at the packet, I said, no sugar, just chemical. I said, this is just a chemical. You could see on the thing it said zero calories. I remember my oldest son, we saw a billboard once for some soda, it said, just for the taste of it. He said, yes, Mata, it's not food, just the taste. You know, fake food, zero calories. Zero calories means it's not food. So you may think it's bhakti. You may think, oh, it looks like food, right? Like this lady, she thought it's sugar. Looks like sugar, tastes something like sugar, but it's not. So we may not be actually performing bhakti, which may mean we're doing karma yoga, or we're doing Gyan Yoga, or we're doing Dhyan Yoga, or maybe we have Karma Mishra Bhakti, Gyan Mishra Bhakti, Yoga Mishra Bhakti. This is much more common than we think, even in the Hare Krishna movement, by the way. Or we may not be doing, just like Krishna says in the 12th chapter, always think of me with love. If you can't do that, do Sadhan Bhakti to attain the desire to achieve me, and if you can't do that, just work for me. So we may be just working for Krishna. Because actual sadhana bhakti begins, Nectar Devotion Chapter 2, with thinking of Krishna. And just like Srila Prabhupada said about japa, he said, if you're chanting japa and thinking of material things, he said, then it is useless. And he has this long pause. He says, or it will take a long time. He said, when you're chanting, why can't you remember Krishna's instructions in the Bhagavad Gita, which is today's verse, Arjuna is remembering Krishna's instructions. He said, remember how Krishna's killing the demons and the coward boys are encouraging him with claps. He says, why are you reading Krishna books? So we may think we're doing bhakti and we're doing something else. We're just externally working for Krishna, or we're doing karma yoga. We're thinking, I need to be a pious person in the world, and in that way I'll attain Krishna. Or we have some parasites, we have some offenses. We're doing real bhakti, but we're always, generally we're offending devotees. But we can be doing the other offenses too, thinking that the chanting is ritualistic and so forth. So what is the real bhakti we need to do in order to see these two things? The naked form of our material desires. When we see the naked form of our material desires, giving them up is very, very, very easy. Daivyesha gunamayi mama maya dharatya. What did the demigods say? Chapter 2 of the 10th canto. The whole ocean of material life becomes like a what?
The amount of water contains the hoofprint of a calf.
The amount of water in a hoofprint of a calf. I don't think we see very many calves running around. You can think of like a big dog. A big dog steps in some mud and the water fills up. It's nothing. So all of our struggle with Maya, if we see... It becomes just like a little puddle, and we can cross over very easily. We'll see Maya for what it is, and then we'll just immediately go, look, I don't want that, genuinely. And to see the true color of our relationship with Krishna, to wake up to who we are. Oh, I want to love Krishna this way. I want to serve Krishna this way. I want to serve the devotees in this way. So how to have the real bhakti that will do that for us? So that is also given in today's verse. What was Arjuna doing? We look back at today's verse. He was Vasudev Angri. Angri means lotus feet of Krishna. And he was Anu Dhyana. What does Dhyana mean?
Meditation.
meditation. Anu means every day or all the time. Prabhupada's translating here as constant. It can also mean every day. And Vishnu Chakrabarti Thakur in his commentary in Bhaktivinoda Samhita Sindhu, when Rupa Goswami says, always remember Krishna and never forget him, he says, for the beginners, this may mean at least every day. You have a regular time when you're meditating on Krishna. A regular time when you're remembering Krishna, if you cannot do it constantly. So let's look at the two parts of this. So the first part is that there's the personal feature. We're remembering the lotus feet. Remembering the lotus feet. I know one leader in ISKCON who told me, Urmila, I am usually conscious of Krishna consciousness, but I am practically never conscious of Krishna. So we're running around all day long meditating on our service. That's very nice. That's very good. But we also want to meditate on Krishna in his personal feature. Just like a person may work hard for his family, but if he never sees his family. I was staying with a family where the husband is leaving early in the morning, coming back late at night, and he only sees his wife and child maybe, you know, once in a month for an hour. Or you go to places like the Middle East, and people are seeing their family once in a year. Sometimes once every 4 years. Prabhupada talked about how there was this little child that he knew in India, about 3 years old, and his father was working like that, leaving early in the morning, coming back late at night. And one time the father came for a vacation, and the child looked at his mother. Who is that man? So working hard for Krishna, very nice. We should work hard for Krishna, undoubtedly. But also we need to spend some time meditating on Krishna. And Krishna's personal feature, Krishna's lotus feet, his calves, his knees, his abdomen, his lotus hands, his flute, his beautiful eyebrows, his laughter. Lord Kapila Dev says to meditate on the laughter of the Lord. Even when Nisingadev is angry, he's laughing, you know? Hirani Kashyapu was like, kept me away from this laughter. So to meditate on Krishna personally, his name, his form, his qualities and pastimes. Not just working hard, working hard, working hard, working hard, working hard, but working hard for whom? Even an ordinary materialist, when they're at work, they have a photo of their family, isn't it? Yes? Working for someone, for whom? So I often tell about how my father, he was a very big man in the world. He was the CEO of a multinational company, and he was a temple president, not of a Hare Krishna temple. And still, he would give me 2 hours every morning just for me. My mother would stay up till 2 o'clock watching television, and she would wake up at 10 in the morning. But my father would wake up at 5, and every morning, 2 hours, he would spend with me, from the time I was 2 years old until I went to university. And, you know, when I got Gayatri from Prabhupada, my father gave Prabhupada a check for life membership at the same time. And Prabhupada said, good father, good daughter. But my father had such a wonderful, positive influence on my life because he gave me that time every day. He would make me breakfast. I mean, he would cook. He just, in those days, the husbands didn't cook. But he would make a fresh orange juice, and he would toast bread for me and things like this, and he would tell me stories, and he would teach me about morals and ethics. He spent time just with me. You understand? He wasn't just working for me. He would time with me. I remember once my husband said, you know, Urmila, we're only seeing each other at the morning program. We become so busy in our service, we don't spend any time together anymore. So then we made it time. I think it was 8 to 9 at night. My husband used to fast all day and only eat in the evening. I couldn't do that. I'm not a very good wife. I couldn't follow his footsteps. But I would give him his prasadam at night, and we would talk about the day and just spend some time with each other. Sometimes go to the post office. So my point is, if you want a relationship with somebody, you have to spend time with that just with that somebody. It can't always be about that somebody. It's got to be sometimes with that somebody. In a very personal way. Just like Prabhupada said about chanting, he said, why are you reading Krishna book then? What is the point? Or many times with japa, he would say, you're seeing the deity, why can't you meditate on the deity while you're chanting? What is the difficulty? What is the point of seeing the deity if you don't remember the deity? What's the point of hearing the leela if you don't remember the leela? So very, very personal. Very, very personal. And how? By hearing. Not concocting something. Not making up our own kind of meditation or our own topic for meditation. But meditating based on hearing. Hearing Krishna's instructions. Hearing from the Bhagavatam. Now we have this other very nice verse, which Jiva Goswami flags as the concluding verse of the Bhagavatam, although it's just in the second canto. Pimantiye Bhagavata Atmana Satam Katam Ritam Shravana Puteshu Samritam Punantita Vishaya Vidyushita Swayam Vridantita Chadana Sharo Ruhanitikam. So this is a very similar verse, that is 2.2.37. It's a very, very similar verse. By drinking Pibanti, by drinking the Bhagavatam, all of the dirt is cleansed away and one gets the lotus feet of the Lord. This is a repeating theme in the Bhagavatam, in the Bhagavad Gita, all by the Acharyas. By not just hearing Pibanti, by drinking, not just hearing superficially, I did my little hearing, I did my reading. And of course, the word in today's verse is dhyana, meditation. So we'll be talking about this on Saturday, Krishna willing, with Manashiksha in text 11, where Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains dhyana, or meditation, according to Jiva Goswami, which he also explains in Harinam Chintamani, which Satchinanda Maharaj... Are you going to be teaching about the stages of meditation in Harinam Chintamani in your seminars? Not this time. Or did I miss it last night while I was dealing with clothes? And it's also in the Jiva Dharma. And Prabhupada also deals with the stages of meditation in...
The Act of Instruction,
text 8, where he's quoting from Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. So we're not going to get into this in depth right now, but it starts with hearing. It goes from hearing to accepting to meditation to trance to perfection. And then in the middle stages, there's also interrupted, not interrupted, concentrated, expanded, and trance. So to understand this, you can think about making burfi. We talked about this on the first day of the camp. So our meditation on Krishna, our hearing about Krishna, should be like making burfi. So first you get some milk and a pot, right? Yes? You start with milk and a pot. So that's just like hearing. Then you put it on the fire. That's like accepting. Yes, I'm making burfi now. You turn on the fire. And then you have to stir the milk. And then you stir the milk. And then you go set up the rice, and you stir the milk, and you start the dal, and you stir the rice, the milk, and you cut up the potatoes, and you stir the rice, and you answer your milk, rather, and you answer your phone. Right? It's interrupted. You're meditating on Krishna, and then your mind goes here. You're meditating on Krishna. So then the milk boils, and then you're stirring without interruption. Understand? Then the milk gets what? Thick. It starts to get thick. And then as you really stir it, if you've any of you have made burfi, I don't think anybody makes burfi in the Hare Krishna movement anymore, but you know, as you really make burfi, then it expands. And then it is so sweet, and you take it out of the pot, and you offer it to Krishna. And then you get to share it with your friends. So this is the way we should be hearing and meditating. We should aim to be going deeper and deeper and deeper. Don't just start with getting the milk. That's good. You have the book on your shelf. I bought the book. Very nice. Now, open it and read it. So that's turning on the fire. And then put your attention into it. Meditate on it. This is like stirring it. And then absorption. Absorption. Until one is fully in Samadhi. And this is actual Krishna, what is the word? The International Society for what again? Krishna what? I'm sorry, what was that? Krishna what? I'm sorry, I didn't hear you. Krishna what?
Consciousness.
Consciousness. That means Krishna's in your consciousness. Does that make sense to everybody? This is not the society of Tilak and Dodis and Neckbeads and Haribo and Pamho and Agusp and I'm so fallen, Prabhu. It's a society for Krishna consciousness. And all of the Tilak and the Neckbeads and the Saris and the Dodis and the I'm so fallen, Prabhu, are meant to bring us to Krishna consciousness. So this is what we should use our will for. This is the purpose, the proper use of our will. To choose to absorb ourselves more and more, deeper and deeper, sweeter and sweeter, expanding, expanding, absorption, absorption, in hearing and meditation. All of the work we do, Mama Nuswam Yujicha, all of the work we do should be in this mood of hearing and meditation, not just superficially. And how do we know? Because we'll start to see the naked form of material desires, and we will start to experience our relationship with Krishna in its true color. And if those are not happening, then we need to go back to the Krishna consciousness. And I thought it was very interesting when we looked at .285, the section I was reading, where it said that when we hear the Bhagavatam, the instructions of the Lord that sits on the lotus of our heart in our relationship with Krishna, then not only does our relationship with Krishna blossom, but it says they were engaged in preaching work automatically by spiritual impetus, and thus they delivered many poor souls entangled in the material modes. When we personally see the naked form of material desires and reject them from that platform, and when our relationship with Krishna starts to be revealed in its true color, we are so excited and so full and so happy that naturally we want to share. As David says in the Bible, my cup runneth over. That Krishna is giving us so much pizza or so many samosas that we can't eat them all, and we have to share. And this is the way to be the best preachers. We talk so much in our movement how to distribute more books, how to make more devotees, how to preach to Westerners. If we really want to do this, if we are so full with a natural distaste for material desires and our true color of our relationship with Krishna, then we don't have to preach, one could be a bhajan and another, but we will naturally want to distribute. So thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Srila Bhagavatam ki jai. Yes, Maharaj.
I really appreciated your lecture. I have just a technical question, and then I have a question on content. So the technical we can do really quick. This 2.237, this Bhimanti Bhagavatam, Jiva Goswami says, It's
the concluding verse of the Bhagavatam.
Concluding verse.
If you want more information, I would suggest you talk to Radhika Raman Prabhu. He gave. I think you were there at Radhadesh. He gave a seminar on the, I think it was six most important verses in any scripture. And he asked us to analyze. I know Bhakti Vigyan Swami is there. I think you were there. He asked us to analyze different scriptures. We went into groups. I remember my group analyzed the Ishopanishad. And you look for the introductory verse, the concluding verse, the surprising verse, the verse that has the main theme, and there's a couple of others, there's six altogether. And he mentioned how Jiva Goswami identified these key verses from the Bhagavatam. And this is the concluding verse of the Bhagavatam, although it appears in the second canto, very early in the Bhagavatam. And after this, Maharaj Brickett asked some more questions. But this verse gives the main conclusion of the Bhagavatam. So Radhika Raman Prabhu is your go-to person for more in-depth understanding on this.
I have been thinking very much about this subject-based verses we quoted, how we should understand vidya and avidya, asambhava, the temporary and the eternal, and the Bhagavad Gita, the phenomenal and the nominous reality. I understand that on the first take, to mean sambandha gyan. Now I would like you to unpack this, if possible, on the second take. What does it mean to understand the material world and the spiritual world side by side? Could it mean, and this is one thing, that for instance we must understand what you discussed I would say psychologically as shadows. You know, we think we do, we have only the best attention, but really our tendency to criticize is driving us, or our greed is, or all these things drive. Does this mean this part, or does it mean maybe to, it's good to know a little of the material world, be a little world wise, to navigate through the modes and use sattva. What does it mean? How can you unpack it further?
Oh, that's really wonderful. When you were speaking, I was thinking of hundreds of different classes one could give on this one topic. I think that's also a fact. Just like in Gurukula, Srila Prabhupada says in the second canto, the Gurukula is meant for teaching higher values of life along with specific training for a livelihood. So one is supposed to learn both. He said Gurukula is for the attached and the detached. And as most young people are going to get married, have a family, and have an occupation. So learning the temporary and the eternal, vidya and avidya side by side, means that. Prabhupada said, which is what you were saying, how to navigate the material world. Is that what you meant?
Yeah.
Just like in Bombay in 1976, Srila Prabhupada gave a series of lectures on the Brahmacharya Ashram. And Prabhupada was going back and forth between talking about the adult men in the Brahmacharya Ashram in the Mumbai temple and the children in the Gurukula. And he was equating them back and forth over and over again. And he said the Brahmacharya should be taught to know everything of something and something of everything. That they should all learn to be expert. I'm sorry, I'll slow down. The Brahmacharya should be taught something of everything and everything of something. And Prabhupada was relating this to the quality of daksha, or expert. That the devotees had to be expert, and it's very nice in this lecture. Prabhupada said the devotees should not only be expert in their Krishna consciousness, but they should be expert in whatever service they're doing for Krishna. So I like to give the example. I lived at a temple where the cook didn't follow any recipes and she didn't have any training in cooking. And she said, oh, it's all just about bhakti. And so one morning she made avocado halva. So, you know, I mean, Vidura and ecstasy can offer Krishna the banana peels, but it's not that we should make that as a policy. So yeah, I see knowing vidya and avidya and knowing eternal and temporary also means if I'm driving a car, I need to know how to drive a car. If I'm cooking, I need to know how to cook. If I'm teaching, I need to know how to teach, which is a very radical idea in Maharaj Krishna. The most radical. We still don't train people how to teach. If I'm going to dress the deities, now we have our Mayapur Academy. You know, if I'm going to play mridanga, I should learn how to play, right? Sometimes people play mridanga, they're just wham, 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 right? Doesn't that drive you crazy? Yes. So it definitely also means that. I think in another way we could look at it, just like, isn't it interesting that in the 14th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, which is about, what's the 14th chapter about?
Three modes of material
nature. Krishna starts off by saying, I'm going to tell you something that's better than anything else I've told you. And when you read that, you say, huh? Chapter 12 was about devotional service. The four key verses are in chapter 10. Why are the modes of material nature the best thing you have to tell me? Interesting, isn't it? So, you know, how does the world work? And not just how the world works, I really liked what Bhakti Ananda Tirtha, did I get that right?
Yes.
Bhakti Ananda Tirtha Maharaj, I keep just thinking it was Mahatattva Prabhu. He was saying, you know, don't just be in the same category. So when we say understand how the material world works, we mean from a different perspective. Don't just know how to fix the car, don't just know how to make halva, but also have the perspective that this is Krishna's energy. And that way, I really like what he was saying yesterday, how the devotee is always happy even in the material world. Such a nice quote in the chapter 20 of Krishna book, where Prabhupada says that the materialists see the world as very aggressive, but to the devotees, everything is happily situated. Did I get that right? So sometimes when I say that quote to devotees, they become surprised. And they think, oh, I thought the materialists are all happy. And for the devotees, they see everything as very aggressive. And I said, then why do you want to be a devotee? So knowing matter and spirit side by side also means knowing how to deal with matter so that you're actually happy. Knowing how to engage matter in Krishna's service. Is that what you meant, Maharaj?
I didn't mean anything. I sincerely asked the question. Of course, I've explored the subject, but your
okay. I think you could apply this in so many things, just like Pulananda Swami's. I just published a book on Ayurveda. So, you know, I've done beginning, you know, nursery school study of Ayurveda. So you can look at Ayurveda from a purely physiological perspective, but you can also look at Ayurveda from a cosmic perspective, isn't it?
Spiritual.
And a spiritual perspective.
Is it available in English?
So this is, and we find that Srila Prabhupada refers to Ayurvedic principles and Ayurvedic terms, isn't it? Once you've studied Ayurveda, then it starts jumping out at you from the books and the lectures that Prabhupada talks about the dhatus and the different kinds of prana, and he's talking about Ayurvedic principles. And in fact, a lot of the practices that we do, this is a little plug for your book, which I haven't read yet, but a lot of the principles that we do in the Hare Krishna movement that we just think it's some kind of ritual or some sort of Indian cultural thing, has a scientific Ayurvedic background. But you could be an Ayurvedic doctor and be a materialist. But there, you can also see it spiritually. So I understanding matter and spirit side by side can also be understood in that way. And I'm sure that there are thousands of different ways, at least hundreds if not thousands of different ways, that we could explore this understanding, knowledge and ignorance side by side. So yes, today I was concentrating on the psychological, the inner, understanding our Maya and understanding our relationship with Krishna side by side so we can make a good choice and use our will properly. But thank you. Yes, Prabhu.
When you spoke about the naked material desires, you went a bit fast for me. Maybe you could explain once more, what is a naked material desire? And you also said, once we perceive this naked material desire, it's gone very quickly. Krishna takes it away very quickly. But there I'm also thinking, isn't it also a question of, do we want to see?
Yes. Yes, so I've personally analyzed this as four steps based on Bhagavad Gita. So first step is you have to want to see. You have to get close to Krishna. So this can be Krishna, I'm your disciple. It can be you chant with attention, you worship the deity with attention, you cook with attention. It's not only chanting with attention. It's not that we chant with attention and we don't do anything else with attention. You understand? So we come close to the light. We put ourselves into the light, out of the darkness into the light. I come close, and I have a desire to see and know truth. Param sattva dhimahi. I want to know the truth. I say to Krishna, show me the truth. Instruct me. I want to serve you. That's our first step. That I do. Then what does Krishna do? He shows you Maya and Krishna. Just like he did to Arjuna. Here's me, here's the material energy, right? He showed him everything. So we see that pattern in this verse too, in the other verses that I quoted. So here's the dirt and here's the nectar. Krishna shows you, and he shows you in reality. And I'll get to your question about naked form in a minute. So Krishna shows you that. Then at the end of Bhagavad Gita, after Krishna has shown Arjuna all this, he tells Arjuna, now you decide. So I met one Indian gentleman who told me, that verse is my favorite verse of the Bhagavad Gita. He said, that is the verse of the Bhagavad Gita I always follow, where Krishna says to Arjuna, now you do what you like. So then we have to choose. And we're going to see Vijaya and Avijaya side by side. You're going to see it side by side. Here's Maya in its naked form, and here's the true color of your relationship with Krishna. And depending where you are, you'll see that more or less degrees. You follow? In other words, true color of your relationship with Krishna, you may just see in general way I'm a soul, or you may start to see I'm a cowherd boy, you know. That's not... And then you have to choose. So third step is you choose. Because our will is never removed. Fourth step, Krishna gives you whatever you choose and takes away whatever you don't choose. So Krishna removes the Maya. If you choose Krishna, not Maya, Krishna removes the Maya. You don't remove the Maya. You can't. We don't have the capacity, divyesha. It's Krishna's energy. And it's effortless on our part. The removal of the attachment is effortless. It's like stepping over a little puddle. There's no effort involved at all. But the effort that's involved is wanting to see the truth and choosing truth. But the removal of Maya is not, it's not done by us. Showing is not done by us. That's done by Krishna. We can't force a vision of reality. And removing whatever we don't want. If we choose Maya, Krishna will go away. He'll say, okay, I'm going. That's also not done by us. Now, what do I mean by the naked form of material desire? So, I can tell a story about myself. Is that all right? Veer Krishna Swami was telling all these stories about himself, so I'll follow in his footsteps of a confessional. So, I can tell many, but this one I'll tell. So, you know, I worked with Gurukula for many, many years. And Gurukula in our Hare Krishna movement has been notably underfunded and understaffed and underprioritized. And the Prabhupada Centennial Education wasn't one of the pedals. When the GPC committees were first formed, education was not a committee. When the North American Strategic Planning team worked out what are the 17 things that ISKCON has to offer to the world, primary, secondary education was not listed. It's been just consistently and repeatedly sidelined, ignored, not given resources. It's been a consistent pattern. So, but this was the service that I was given, and that's a long story. But anyway, it was the service I was given, and Prabhupada has a statement that Gurukul is our most important project. So I thought, oh, I am dedicated to Prabhupada's most important project. Therefore, I'm most important. You understand? But I didn't know that I was making this jump. Do you all understand what I'm saying? So I was very, very proud of my dedication. I thought my dedication to Gurukula is my shining jewel that I'm offering to Prabhupada. I'm such a fallen nonsense rascal, but I'm dedicated to Gurukula. Okay, I'm chanting my rounds and my gayatris and going to Mangalarti, but so many people do that. But I have a special thing, and that's my dedication to Gurukul, and this I'm offering to Prabhupada. Oh, Prabhupada, this is your most important project, and they don't care, but I do. You understand? And I was I was worshiping this thing in myself. And one day Krishna showed me, that's a long story, but one day Krishna showed me, it's not a jewel, it's a piece of poop. stool, excrement, feces. That I was having this plate and I'm bringing to Prabhupada, here's my diamond. And Prabhupada's going... And I saw it in its naked form. I saw it for what it was. I was confronted. How I was confronted, I don't have time to tell right now, but I was confronted and I saw it as it was and I went, oh. And I looked at it and I saw this thing that I think is devotion is envy. I was envious of the resources being given to other projects, and pride, and criticism. But I had it all dressed up. You know, and it was all decorated. So I took these feces and I had put jewels on it and a crown. Yes, exactly, that face you're making. When you see the naked form of something, you go, now that's very different. That's a very different experience from like you're chanting in the kirtan and you think, I hope everybody sees how nicely I'm chanting in the kirtan. And Krishna goes, that's pride. And you say, no, it's not pride. I don't want that. And then it comes back and you say, no, I don't want that. And it comes back and you say, no, I don't want that. Because when you say, no, I don't want that, you're lying. Do you understand? But when Krishna puts it in front of you and says, here's the actual form of your material desire, and you don't say, no, I don't want that. You say, oh, I am wanting this. Like the way Indians or Russians speak English. They put everything in the present participle. And you look at it and you go, I am wanting this now? You own it. You can't let go of something until you admit that you are holding it. So if when Krishna says you're being prideful, no, I'm not being prideful, you never own it. Because it's choice. So you're looking at, I am doing this. What am I doing? And you look and you say, whoa, that's what I'm doing, and you grieve. There's some remorse. There's some pain, which is why we don't want to do this, frankly. There's some pain. I'm doing this, and I've been doing this for years. And by doing this, I've hurt my relationship with my guru, with Krishna, with the Vaishnavas, and I thought I was making advancement, and I'm just piling up the poop. And you see this, and you grieve. And then you genuinely say, I am sorry, I do not want this anymore. And you make a real choice. Now, what's nice is that Krishna is showing you side by side. He's showing you that and he's showing you the other also. So I think of it like this, if you've offended a friend, you know, you've really offended some friend with whom you want a relationship, and you come to that friend and you honestly see, I have offended you. But you're with your friend. I think of it like you're sitting on the sofa with your friend. And that your friend has his arm around you, her arm around you, and you say, I am so sorry, and you really feel sorry. And you say, I understand, I have hurt our relationship. I understand, I have hurt myself. But you're saying this with your friend, not alone in your room. It's part of your relationship with your friend. And you, maybe you're crying, and then the friend says, it's okay. You know, our landlady, she did this thing with my laundry, and she was so upset. She was so upset. I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. And I went and I gave her a hug. I said, Okay. She didn't know much. The only English practice she knows is okay. You know, and I held her hand and said, okay, okay, okay. We fix. Okay, okay, okay. So you're saying, Krishna, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. And he says, okay, okay. It's okay. I love you. It's okay. It's okay. You're mine. I don't want this anymore. Okay. Let's get rid of it. And it's good. Is that all right? We need to stop here. I'm sorry. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Srila Bhagavatam ki jai.
Bravo, bravo. Well spoken, well spoken.